even in the midst of poverty and persecution, Jews went out of their way to honor the Sabbath, ensuring that God's presence was felt in their homes. And thus the perpetuation of parlance that applied the word challah to the Sabbath loaves, that identified the challah of the Sabbath table as priestly bread, was itself a way of saying that with the temple gone, it was the humble Jewish home that became a temple in miniature, a dwelling place for the divine. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah Episode 32, The Incredible Evolution of the Word Challah. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10 Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Perhaps the most famous reflection about food in the modern age comes to us from Marcel Proust, who recalled imbibing a tea soaked with crumbs of the cookie known as the Madeleine, and suddenly finding himself summoned back to his childhood when he had last partaken in this beloved pastry. He wrote, "I raised to my lips a spoonful of the tea in which I had soaked a morsel of the cake. No sooner had the warm liquid and the crumbs with it touched my palate, a shudder ran through my whole body, and I stopped, intent upon the extraordinary changes that were taking place. An exquisite pleasure had invaded my senses, but individual, detached, with no suggestion of its origin, and at once the vicissitudes of life had become indifferent to me, its disasters innocuous, its brevity illusory, this new sensation having had on me the effect which love has, of filling me with a precious essence. Or rather, this essence was not in me, it was myself." And Proust adds, "Whence could it have come to me, this all-powerful joy?" End quote. For so many of us, foods summon up to us our childhood. And for Jews, the foods that stand out most of all are the foods of faith, those morsels that sanctify our Sabbaths and define our festivals. And therefore, without question, for so many Jews, central to our memories of these meals is a braided bread known today in Jewish parlance as challah. But here, ladies and gentlemen, is what is striking. The truth is that Jewish law makes no demands regarding the shape or type of bread with which we begin our Sabbath meal. It requests only that the hamotzi, the blessing on the bread, be pronounced upon lechem mishneh, two loaves taken together, in memory of the double portion of man, of manna, that fell in advance of the Sabbath. Moreover, even more strikingly, even more fascinatingly, the fact that we refer to the loaf that developed as being part and parcel of the Sabbath meal as challah is at least initially exceedingly strange. For in the Bible, the word described not the sort of bread that is eaten at a family meal, but in fact the very sort of bread that usually one is not allowed to eat. It was the one loaf of the household that was meant to be a gift to God, given to a man who stood as the representative of God. And yet suddenly, at one point, it became the term applied, originally by Ashkenazim and then spreading throughout other parts of the world, to the bread that Jews not only did eat, but which served as the ultimate embodiment of the Sabbath meal. Charting this striking evolution of a word that begins in the Bible and has become part and parcel of our parlance is the focus of our podcast today. For our mitzvah is the one known as challah. The word challah seems to mean loaf, and it appears first in the context of a mitzvah, delineated in Numbers chapter 15, verse 17. I will read largely from the translation provided by Sepharia, interjecting Hebrew when it is essential. God spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when you enter the land to which I am taking you, and you eat of the bread of the land, you shall set some aside as a gift to God." And then we have the Hebrew, "Reshit arisotechem," as the first yield of your baking, "challah tarimu truma," you shall set aside a loaf, a challah, as a gift. "Goren kein tarimu ota," you shall set it aside as a gift, like the gift from the threshing floor. "Mereshit arisotechem titnu lahashem truma ledorotechem," you shall make a gift to God from the first yield of your baking throughout the ages. Several words appear here in Hebrew that are important. This mitzvah is compared to another known as truma, the obligation to take a portion of one's grain and of one's fruit and bequeath it to the Kohen. Truma means gift, and part of the way in which the Israelite farmer was commanded to remember that all produce is God's gift was to bequeath a bit of one's crop to the men that minister in the sanctuary in the presence of God on behalf of the people of Israel. The Kohanim, the priests, were recipients of this gift. Here, another gift to the Kohen is being introduced. The obligation is to take from one's baking and give a part of it to the Kohen. Today, this mitzvah is still performed, and yet it is not the Kohen that receives this gift. For today, we are all considered to be in a state of ritual impurity. Thus, usually, when baking is done in a traditional Jewish household, a bit of dough is taken off, and then it is burnt. But originally, it was meant to be given to the Kohen. And in the biblical age, this was done slightly differently than now. As the dough was divided up, one entire loaf was separated and designated for the Kohen. Thus writes Gil Marks in his Magisterial Encyclopedia of Jewish Food, quote, "It is a misconception to suppose that Kohanim, meaning priests, went from house to house collecting chunks of raw dough, or that housewives had to drop everything in the middle of baking, in those days a very strenuous and time-consuming activity, to run off and find a Kohen to which to give a piece of raw dough. Rather, the commandment involved giving a loaf of baked bread, and not just any old bread, but one baked into a loaf befitting presentation to a Kohen, a superior loaf." End quote. Challah means, in other words, a superior loaf that is given to the representative of God. And it referred to the loaf that one's household did not eat. What then changed? Again, we turn to Gil Marks, who informs us that in the medieval period, many Jewish households reserved their best flour, and therefore their best bread, for the Sabbath. Thus, Gil Marks tells us, quote, "Since one of the most prominent symbols for the Sabbath is that of queen, it was only appropriate that the Sabbath bread would be bread fit for royalty, loaves made from white flour, the type usually reserved for the upper class. Therefore, during the early medieval period, Sephardim and Ashkenazim began to use only white flour whenever possible for the Sabbath loaves. This was much more of a problem for Ashkenazim, who generally did not live in areas that grew wheat, while wheat was the predominant grain in the medieval Muslim world." And he adds, "Among the Ashkenazim of Northern Europe, most families ate black bread, round loaves of dark rye flour or maslin throughout the week. For the Sabbath, however, even the poorest of families would make certain to have loaves, even a very small one, made from white flour. If a family was too poor to obtain the more expensive flour themselves, the Jewish community would provide the necessary funds." End quote. What this meant, ladies and gentlemen, is that in Ashkenaz in the medieval period, throughout the week, Jews would buy coarse black bread from the bakery, often known as potpalter, bread from a non-Jewish baker. And then in preparation for the Sabbath, as Gil Marks explains, they would use fine white flour to bake bread on their own. This meant that as they prepared for the spiritual high point of the Jewish week, they would also, for the only time in the week, perform the mitzvah of hafrashat challah, separating challah. Only a large amount of dough becomes obligated in the mitzvah, and thus preparing these large loaves in honor of the Sabbath became the moment in the week in which the mitzvah of challah was performed. Some suggest that the association with the mitzvah was at least one of the reasons through which the loaves eaten became known as challah, and the point is profound. Technically, the word challah is biblically applied to the part of the dough that is taken off and is not eaten by the household, that which is held as a gift of God. But bound up with the Sabbath presentation was the fact that, even in the midst of poverty and persecution, Jews went out of their way to honor the Sabbath, ensuring that God's presence was felt in their homes. And thus the perpetuation of parlance that applied the word challah to the Sabbath loaves, that identified the challah of the Sabbath table as priestly bread, was itself a way of saying that with the temple gone, it was the humble Jewish home that became a temple in miniature, a dwelling place for the divine, with the Sabbath table being the primary place where Jews worshipfully and lovingly ministered before the divine. As the braided bread of the larger world in which Ashkenazi Jews found themselves became part of the Sabbath table, it, as food historians describe, became the primary loaf identified with the word challah. This larger story is beyond the scope of our podcast. For now, we ought merely to ponder with awe the fact that every time we eat bread at a Sabbath table, and our memory calls us back to our childhood, we are tasting the love and the holiness through the centuries that has allowed and will allow Judaism to continue throughout the generations until the day when the Kohanim that will minister in the temple will be given gifts of challah once again. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off. Quote, historically, Sephardim and Mizrachim used their regular weekday loaves, generally round flatbreads, for the Sabbath and festivals, and they had no special name for the Sabbath bread.